Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have the latest on restaurants and retail shops that are reopening across our region. We'll also have news about relief bills to help renters and mortgage holders. In Santee, hear how council members and the community have reacted to racial incidences at two local grocery stores. Learn about rate reductions for insurance policy holders just expanded by the state insurance commissioner. And if you're ready for some entertainment, the Santee Drive-In has reopened and we'll have the details. Hear about dueling ballot initiatives in Santee and then on Tribal Beat. Learn why some Native American tribes across our region are reopening their casinos while one has opted not to take that gamble. County Parks has some cool new Zoom backgrounds for those of you doing video conferencing. And then from Public News Service, we'll have a report on a backlash against state budget cuts impacting children's programs. So stay tuned for these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Many restaurants have reopened for dine-in services, and retail stores are allowing shoppers back in stores after the state approved a proposal by county supervisors to do so. But retailers, restaurants, and their customers must maintain social distancing and follow new guidelines. For customers, masks are required in stores and restaurants when you're not seated at a table. Tables must be 6 feet apart or have barriers in between to protect public health, among other measures. San Diego Supervisor Diane Jacob called the changes great news, but bars, wineries, and breweries remain closed for now. County supervisors have also asked the governor to approve a pilot program that could allow San Diego to move partially into Stage 3 by reopening hair and nail salons, gym and fitness facilities, pools and apartment complexes, outdoor religious services, and research labs. In addition, youth sports could start up for practices only, no games, in groups of 12 or less, and therapeutic and peer support groups could resume meeting in small groups. However, the state has not approved those proposals so far. Even if approved, the county's plan would not reopen all Stage 3 operations, so movie theaters, in-person worship services, colleges, sports leagues, arts and cultural institutions, and so forth would remain closed, among other venues. Nor does the plan address even more crowded Stage 4 businesses such as amusement parks or concert halls. The pilot program proposal was supported by four county supervisors, with Nathan Fletcher opposed. Supervisor Jim Desmond has called the pilot program a step in the right direction, but Fletcher believes it's too soon to open higher-risk Stage 3 activities slated by the governor to start in just a couple of weeks. He wants to first monitor the impacts of Stage 2 reopenings now underway. Now, the San Diego and Imperial Small Business Development Center Network and Supervisor Fletcher have partnered up to help small business owners with reopening. They have a new website, SDIVSBDC, and that stands for San Diego and Imperial Small Business Development Center Network, and it offers daily updates for businesses on regulations, health guidelines, and opportunities to access capital. Also available are free one-on-one consulting and training, including some industry-specific options. A modified county stay-home order now allows people to leave home to go to open businesses, out for exercise, or for essential needs, though people are required to stay 6 feet from others and follow the requirements for facial coverings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
As missed rent payments and delinquent mortgages pile up across the state, California's Democratic lawmakers have introduced sweeping proposals aimed at shielding homeowners, renters, and landlords from the economic fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic, CalMatters reports. A plan put forward by San Diego Senator Tony Atkins, leader of the state Senate, would grant qualifying renters 10 years to repay missed payments directly to the state, which would in turn compensate landlords for missed rent with tax credits that could be sold to pay mortgages and other bills. A separate bill from Assemblywoman Monique Limon would allow California homeowners to request forbearance on their mortgages for nearly a year, while requiring mortgage servicers in most circumstances to tack on missed payments in monthly installments at the end of the loan. The legislation would also allow borrowers of auto loans, payday loans, and other debts to postpone payments without fear of immediate repossession or other penalties. Both proposals represent an unprecedented intervention from state government into California's housing and consumer debt markets and are expected to draw scrutiny from interest groups. Banks and mortgage servicers are concerned with how a protracted forbearance would affect their bottom lines, while landlord and tenant groups are united in their demands for state funds, but have very different views of what strings should be attached to emergency rental help. While California's court system hit pause on most eviction proceedings during the governor's declared state of emergency, the first of each month brings renewed uncertainties for renters and landlords over the long term. With the state hamstrung by a projected $54 billion deficit, Senate Democratic leaders think they've figured out a creative way to help both renters and landlords without depleting state coffers. Tenants and landlords would voluntarily enter a state program where renters could repay past due rents directly to the state over 10 years, starting in 2024. No late fees or interest would be added on to missed rent payments, and the state would forgive the debt of renters still having major financial hardships. Landlords would not be able to evict those tenants, but would instead receive tax credits from the state equal to the lost rents, starting in 2024. Those tax credits would be transferable, so landlords could conceivably sell them now to meet mortgage payments and other expenses. Senator Steve Bradford, who helped develop the proposal, says it's not a giveaway, adding, "The Senate is giving tenants and landlords a hand up, not a handout." The program would cost the state an estimated $300 to $500 million per year, but would not be hard capped in case the need exceeds estimates. Renters would have to provide documentation that they experienced financial hardship due to COVID-19, and higher income renters could be excluded. Both tenant and landlord groups, desperate for public dollars, expressed cautious optimism about the proposal, but warned details need to be ironed out before they could lend full support. Brian Augusta, lobbyist with the California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation, says he's encouraged but stresses that any renter debt plan must be accompanied by a guarantee that landlords could not use non-payment of rent due to COVID-19 as a pretext for eviction. Tenant groups also want participation in the program to be mandatory for landlords. Landlord groups have concerns about whether selling tax credits would actually free up enough cash for them to meet their bills. Deborah Carlton, lobbyist for the California Apartment Association, says the bill would provide relief to those owners who can wait till 2024. The federal stimulus plan, signed into law in March, prohibited mortgage servicers from initiating foreclosures on homes financed with federally backed mortgages. Borrowers could also request up to 180 days for forbearance, basically 6 months of not paying their monthly mortgage bills, with an option for 180 more days if the national state of emergency isn't lifted by then. But privately owned mortgages not insured by the federal government are exempt from those rules. Those loans account for roughly 30% of mortgages nationally, and likely a larger share in California, where high home prices often exceed what federal mortgage programs are allowed to finance. Limón's bill would extend the ban on foreclosures to private mortgages and allow borrowers to temporarily waive mortgage payments for nearly a year, with the forbearance extending beyond California's declared state of emergency. In other words, miss 6 months of your mortgage because you got laid off due to COVID-19, and you'll get 6 months at the end of your loan to make it up. No interest or penalties allowed. Meanwhile, in Congress, Democrats released a third federal stimulus proposal last week, with many of the same borrower relief provisions contained in Limón's bill. But some Republicans are balking. Lisa Sitkin, attorney with the National Low Income Housing Project, says, "We can't necessarily rely on what's going to happen out of Washington." She wants the state to help, especially with low and moderate income borrowers. A spokesperson for the California Bankers Association says the group has not yet taken a formal position on the bill and cited voluntary arrangements some banks are already striking with borrowers. Governor Gavin Newsom negotiated a deal with several banks and credit unions in late March that would allow 90-day grace periods for certain borrowers. But Diana Dykstra, chief executive of the California Credit Union League, says granting extended forbearances on mortgages would be ruinous for smaller banks who depend on interest payments as capital cushions. For the credit unions, it would be a financial disaster, she says, of allowing people to go a full year without making mortgage payments. Beyond the new protections for homeowners, Limon's bill in Sacramento would help other borrowers. Repossession firms would be prohibited from repossessing cars for delinquent auto payments until 180 days after the state of emergency declaration was lifted. Auto loan borrowers could request forbearances for nearly a year, and missed payments would be tacked on to the end of the loan term instead of delivered in a lump sum payment. Landlords with mortgage debt would be granted similar forbearance options, as long as they deliver rent relief to tenants and agree to halt evictions. Vendors of payday loans would be required to reduce fees to borrowers and provide extended repayment plans. With the state legislature working on an accelerated time frame due to a pandemic-induced recess, both the Senate renter relief proposal and Limon's bill will face crucial votes in the coming weeks. This report is based on an article by Cal Matters, an independent public interest journalism venture covering California state politics and government. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
In the wake of two nationally publicized racial incidents earlier this month in which shoppers at Santee grocery stores wore masks with Nazi swastikas and a Ku Klux Klan hood, the Santee City Council voted on May 13th to confront the issue by expanding a community police board that will develop strategies for addressing intolerance. Mayor John Minto, who publicly denounced the incidents soon after they occurred, said he spent many hours talking with residents about what happened and is convinced the city cannot ignore or simply shrug it off. He says, quote, "We have to understand why and where it's happening. We're going to triage it, find out where most of the worst symptoms are, and bring people together." The sheriff investigated the incidents and identified the individuals involved, but did not make their names public and did not make any arrests. Though the acts were offensive, according to Sheriff Bill Gore, the men did not commit any crimes. The council voted unanimously during its virtual meeting to expand the community-oriented policing committee by adding up to 4 new members. The committee works with the sheriff's department, Santee's contracted police provider, on crime prevention and security strategies. Minto, who chairs the board, said he has two specific people he wants to bring on, an African-American man and a woman from the Anti-Defamation League, but didn't provide their names because he didn't have their agreement yet. Before the vote, the council heard from 22 people who sent letters and emails to the city about the explosive incidents, which made headlines both locally and nationally. The incidents opened up festering scars from Santee's history of documented hate crimes and white nationalist groups that gave rise to the derogatory nickname Klan T. The city has tried in recent years to overcome that stigma, even investing in a rebranding campaign. But the recent racial incidents threatened to undermine that progress. Public comments were nearly unanimous in condemning the acts by two men, one wearing a hood similar to those worn by the KKK inside the Santee Vons, and another wearing a mask with a Nazi swastika while shopping at the Santee Food for Less store. Michelle Perchez wrote in an email to the city, quote, "This type of behavior shouldn't be ignored. I firmly believe that to ignore it is to condone it." Other public commenters said the incidents revealed that while Santee has changed in recent decades and its residents have become more diverse, vestiges of racism remain, and people of color experience it. Evelyn Andrade, who ran unsuccessfully for city council in 2018 against the incumbent, Rob McNellis, told the council, quote, "There is racism in Santee, and it pervades the school system. It's offensive to people like me to say, this is not who we are anymore. So please stop saying that." McNellis previously called the incidents classless and tasteless. During the meeting, McNellis said he's offended when he hears people call Santee a racist community. It hasn't been as long as I've been here, adding that he has been a resident for 26 years. but McNellis drew fire from some residents for insisting that the incidents with the two masked men didn't have anything to do with racism, but were merely statements protesting the requirement to wear masks due to the COVID-19 pandemic. He added, "It was a horrible, horrible way to state it." Councilman Stephen Houlihan fired back, "I absolutely denounce and despise these symbols," he said of the KKK hood and swastikas. "We have to address it, and just saying this is not who we are is unacceptable." Houlihan noted the negative publicity that will have serious financial consequences if people decide not to visit and shop in Santee. "We must create an environment that shows we are not like this," he told his colleagues on the council. The meeting was the city's fourth held with members in remote locations via teleconferencing technology during the coronavirus pandemic. Minto, a former San Diego police detective, said he has experience in dealing with racial intolerance and that the police committee is the right venue to develop a plan for addressing this issue. He noted that Starbucks worked with the Anti-Defamation League a few years ago after the coffee purveyor sustained outrage after a barista told two black men meeting in a coffee shop to leave. "We're not going to have a plan overnight," Minto said. "It has to be done thoughtfully and legally." But he added, quote, "People who live here and visit here deserve to feel safe." Reporting from Santee for East County Magazine, this is Brianna Gomez. California Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara has extended his order requiring insurance companies to return partial insurance premiums to consumers and businesses and provide financial relief amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The bulletin now includes May, as well as March and April. It covers at least six types of insurance: private and commercial automobile insurance, workers' compensation, commercial multi-peril, commercial liability, medical malpractice, and any other insurance line where the risk of loss has fallen substantially due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Department of Insurance will review all premium adjustments to ensure that they are fair and adequately reflect policyholders' reduced risk. Insurance companies must provide an adjustment to the premium, which can be a partial premium credit, reduction, return, or other appropriate adjustment no later than August 11th. The reduction in insurance costs for consumers reflects the reduced risks of accident or loss, with many still under stay-at-home orders. In addition, insurers are asked to work with any policyholders who have been acutely impacted by COVID-19 if they are unable to pay their premiums on time. He has asked insurance companies to extend a 60-day grace period for payments, as well as offer online payments to protect the health and safety of both workers and customers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Brianna Gomez with East County Magazine Arts and Music Spotlight. Eager for entertainment? It's showtime in Santee. Although indoor movie theaters across California remain closed due to COVID-19, the Santee Drive-In Movie Theater reopened over the weekend, showing four movies at its two theaters. The theater accepts cash only. If you go, you'll need to bring your own popcorn or other refreshments, since the snack bar will be closed. Also, bring your own FM radio to listen to the movies by tuning in to 89.3 or 89.7 FM. Loaner radios are available with a refundable deposit. Guests must park 10 feet from other vehicles and stay in vehicles except when going to the restroom, when masks and social distancing are required. Drive-ins, once popular across the U.S., dwindled in recent years due to competition from multiplex movie theaters. But even after those theaters are allowed to reopen, concerns about COVID-19 may result in a resurgence of popularity for drive-in theaters. To view movie trailers of coming attractions and get ticket information, you can visit SanteeDriveInTheater.com.
The region's COVID-19 testing is expanding. The public can now get free testing at two new walk-up sites run by the state: the former county assessor's office on Magnolia Avenue in El Cajon, and the Tubman Chavez Center on Euclid Avenue in southeast San Diego. The new state-run sites are in addition to state sites already operating in Escondido and Chula Vista. To make a free appointment at any state-run locations, visit lhi.care/COVID testing or call 888-634-1123. LHI stands for Local Health Initiative, and again, that website is lhi.care/COVID testing. Other tests are available for a fee. The county has opened an appointment-only drive-up testing site at the stadium in Mission Valley. That site can test up to 180 individuals a day and will operate Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. To make an appointment for the site at the stadium, county residents can call 211. Additionally, the county's Live Well on Wheels mobile office will offer COVID-19 testing at the Euclid Health Center each Saturday for the foreseeable future. An appointment is required. COVID-19 testing options include calling your doctor or medical provider to schedule an appointment, signing up for free tests on the state website at lhi.care/COVID-testing, or calling 211 for the county-run sites. Recording for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
Santee voters will likely see two dueling ballot initiatives on term limits this fall. The City Council, at its most recent virtual meeting, directed the city attorney to return in June with the proposed initiative to go on the city's November ballot. It would challenge an already qualified initiative that calls for term limits for city office holders. The action means Santee voters will see both measures on their ballots November 3rd. The council earlier delayed both the citizens' initiative calling for term limits and a citizens' slow growth initiative until the next general election, instead of adopting the measures by a council vote after residents obtained enough signatures to qualify the measures for a public vote. Both measures are backed by Preserve Wild Santee, an environmental advocacy group that has spent decades trying to block Bonita Ranch, a residential project that would build 3,000 homes and is currently under review by the city. The original term limit measure from Preserve Wild Santee calls for a maximum of 3 terms for council members and mayor. A partial term would count as a full term. That provision would directly impact Councilwoman Laura Cavall, who is serving 2 years on a partial term that ends this year. Under the proposed measure, the maximum service for a Santee office holder would be 20 years, including up to 3 terms for council members and 2 terms for mayor. Under the Preserve Wild Santee initiative, the maximum is just 12 years. Houlihan, who helped gather signatures for the slow growth and term limits measures 2 years ago, opposes putting another measure on the ballot, which he said would confuse voters and cost taxpayers another $100,000 in legal analysis and filing fees. Councilman Ron Hall says he supports longer term limits because of the time it takes to gain knowledge about the job. He contends that it's only fair that office holders be allowed more time to accomplish goals, but he does support some limits on how long officials may serve. Councilman Hall concludes, "All you have to do is look at Washington to realize we need term limits." Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
Viejas Casino and Resort became the first casino in San Diego County to reopen on May 18th, with a socially distanced line wrapped around the building when the tribal gaming operations opened its doors for the first time since March, when it shut down due to the COVID-19 crisis. Viejas is using UV light to sanitize tables, chips, cards, slot machines, and more. Guests and workers are wearing masks, and the casino is closing overnight for deep cleaning. Some slot machines are shut down, and only 3 players per table are allowed. Other changes include switching the buffet to no longer be self-service, though guests can place their order with a server. There is no valet service or bingo. Restaurants are open, and bars, though not for sit-down service in the bar. Several other casinos have also reopened or announced plans to do so, including Hamul, Sequan, Golden Acorn, and Harrah's Rincon. County Public Health Officer Wilma Wooten initially opposed reopening casinos, but later said she recognized tribal sovereignty and worked with the federally recognized tribes on phased reopenings with steps to protect public health and safety as much as possible. As sovereign nations, tribes rely on casino revenues heavily to fund tribal governments, education, and other vital services for their people. So the closure since mid-March has caused economic hardships for many tribal members as well as employees who were laid off or furloughed. but one local casino has bucked the trend, stating it will stay closed indefinitely in accordance with Governor Gavin Newsom's directive. Casino Palma's website states, Chairman Temet Aguilar, the Tribal Council, and Casino Palma leadership do not believe in gambling with the health and safety of our guests, our team members, or the community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The County Parks and Recreation Department has created virtual photo backgrounds that you can use for video conferencing. Now, you can pose with a herd of bighorn sheep in the Anza Borrego Desert, hike to the halfway point of San Diego's toughest climb atop El Capitan, peruse the grounds outside a mountain cabin, visit a nature center or a historic adobe dwelling, enjoy a sunset over Lake Morena, stop to smell the lilacs in Sycamore Canyon, or pause alongside cows on the sprawling hillsides of Santa Isabel. Parks and Rec has selected some of their most popular pictures taken at iconic locales in our region's parks and made them available for download. Your virtual staycation awaits. Here's how to get started. If you're using Zoom, first go to sdparks.org. Click on Parks News Center and open the video conferencing background links. Then, from Zoom, open your settings, click Virtual Background, select the image, and wait for it to upload. You'll be immediately transported to a sunny SoCal destination. If you snap a screenshot during your conference, share with the hashtag UpsideOfInside. It's the coronavirus rendition of Parks and Rec's usual motto, Upside of Outside. You can also find links to all this and more at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Children's groups are speaking out against billions of dollars in state budget cuts being proposed in California, saying programs that benefit kids should be a priority. As a result of the pandemic, California has taken a budget nosedive, going from a $5.6 billion budget surplus in January to a $54.3 billion deficit. No one argues that the state is going to have to do some trimming, but Ted Lempert, who heads the group Children Now, says big cuts to child care, preschool, and K-12 education would be devastating for kids, especially in low-income families.
It's basically taking kids who weren't getting the supports they needed before this pandemic hit and really exacerbating these disparities.
K-12 education is slated for a $19 billion cut over 2 years, but Governor Gavin Newsom did set aside $4.4 billion in emergency federal aid and also has given the schools $2.3 billion that was supposed to be used to bolster the teachers' pension fund. Lempert also objects to the idea of eliminating the crisis hotline for foster youth. He says he's hoping the state and federal governments will work together to soften the blow.
Our next step is to work with the legislature to restore some of them and also, of course, pushing the federal government to provide more relief so some of these proposed cuts do not have to take place.
The legislature will have to vote on a final budget in June. The issue will likely return to the forefront in the mid-year budget revision in the fall. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we have the latest on restaurants and retail shops that are reopening across our region. We'll also have news about relief bills to help renters and mortgage holders. In Santee, hear how council members and the community have reacted to racial incidences at two local grocery stores. Learn about rate reductions for insurance policy holders just expanded by the state insurance commissioner. And if you're ready for some entertainment, the Santee Drive-In has reopened and we'll have the details. Hear about dueling ballot initiatives in Santee and then on Tribal Beat. Learn why some Native American tribes across our region are reopening their casinos, while one has opted not to take that gamble. County Parks has some cool new Zoom backgrounds for those of you doing video conferencing. And then from Public News Service, we'll have a report on a backlash against state budget cuts impacting children's programs. So stay tuned for these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Many restaurants have reopened for dine-in services, and retail stores are allowing shoppers back in stores after the state approved a proposal by county supervisors to do so. But retailers, restaurants, and their customers must maintain social distancing and follow new guidelines. For customers, masks are required in stores and restaurants when you're not seated at a table. Tables must be 6 feet apart or have barriers in between to protect public health, among other measures. San Diego Supervisor Diane Jacob called the changes great news, but bars, wineries, and breweries remain closed for now. County supervisors have also asked the governor to approve a pilot program that could allow San Diego to move partially into Stage 3 by reopening hair and nail salons, gym and fitness facilities, pools and apartment complexes, outdoor religious services, and research labs. In addition, youth sports could start up for practices only, no games, in groups of 12 or less, and therapeutic and peer support groups could resume meeting in small groups. However, the state has not approved those proposals so far. Even if approved, the county's plan would not reopen all Stage 3 operations, so movie theaters, in-person worship services, colleges, sports leagues, arts and cultural institutions, and so forth would remain closed, among other venues. Nor does the plan address even more crowded Stage 4 businesses such as amusement parks or concert halls. The pilot program proposal was supported by four county supervisors, with Nathan Fletcher opposed. Supervisor Jim Desmond has called the pilot program a step in the right direction, but Fletcher believes it's too soon to open higher-risk Stage 3 activities slated by the governor to start in just a couple of weeks. He wants to first monitor the impacts of Stage 2 reopenings now underway. Now, the San Diego and Imperial Small Business Development Center Network and Supervisor Fletcher have partnered up to help small business owners with reopening. They have a new website, SDIVSBDC, and that stands for San Diego and Imperial Small Business Development Center Network, and it offers daily updates for businesses on regulations, health guidelines, and opportunities to access capital. Also available are free one-on-one consulting and training, including some industry-specific options. A modified county stay-home order now allows people to leave home to go to open businesses, out for exercise, or for essential needs, though people are required to stay 6 feet from others and follow the requirements for facial coverings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
As missed rent payments and delinquent mortgages pile up across the state, California's Democratic lawmakers have introduced sweeping proposals aimed at shielding homeowners, renters, and landlords from the economic fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic, CalMatters reports. A plan put forward by San Diego Senator Tony Atkins, leader of the state Senate, would grant qualifying renters 10 years to repay missed payments directly to the state, which would in turn compensate landlords for missed rent with tax credits that could be sold to pay mortgages and other bills. A separate bill from Assemblywoman Monique Limon would allow California homeowners to request forbearance on their mortgages for nearly a year, while requiring mortgage servicers in most circumstances to tack on missed payments in monthly installments at the end of the loan. The legislation would also allow borrowers of auto loans, payday loans, and other debts to postpone payments without fear of immediate repossession or other penalties. Both proposals represent an unprecedented intervention from state government into California's housing and consumer debt markets and are expected to draw scrutiny from interest groups. Banks and mortgage servicers are concerned with how a protracted forbearance would affect their bottom lines, while landlord and tenant groups are united in their demands for state funds but have very different views of what strings should be attached to emergency rental help. While California's court system hit pause on most eviction proceedings during the governor's declared state of emergency, the first of each month brings renewed uncertainties for renters and landlords over the long term. With the state hamstrung by a projected $54 billion deficit, Senate Democratic leaders think they've figured out a creative way to help both renters and landlords without depleting state coffers. Tenants and landlords would voluntarily enter a state program where renters could repay past due rents directly to the state over 10 years, starting in 2024. No late fees or interest would be added on to missed rent payments, and the state would forgive the debt of renters still having major financial hardships. Landlords would not be able to evict those tenants, but would instead receive tax credits from the state equal to the lost rents, starting in 2024. Those tax credits would be transferable, so landlords could conceivably sell them now to meet mortgage payments and other expenses. Senator Steve Bradford, who helped develop the proposal, says it's not a giveaway, adding, "The Senate is giving tenants and landlords a hand up, not a handout." The program would cost the state an estimated $300 to $500 million per year, but would not be hard-capped in case the need exceeds estimates. Renters would have to provide documentation that they experienced financial hardship due to COVID-19, and higher-income renters could be excluded. Both tenant and landlord groups, desperate for public dollars, expressed cautious optimism about the proposal, but warned details need to be ironed out before they could lend full support. Brian Augusta, lobbyist with the California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation, says he's encouraged but stresses that any renter debt plan must be accompanied by a guarantee that landlords could not use non-payment of rent due to COVID-19 as a pretext for eviction. Tenant groups also want participation in the program to be mandatory for landlords. Landlord groups have concerns about whether selling tax credits would actually free up enough cash for them to meet their bills. Deborah Carlton, lobbyist for the California Apartment Association, says the bill would provide relief to those owners who can wait till 2024. The federal stimulus plan, signed into law in March, prohibited mortgage servicers from initiating foreclosures on homes financed with federally backed mortgages. Borrowers could also request up to 180 days for forbearance, basically 6 months of not paying their monthly mortgage bills, with an option for 180 more days if the national state of emergency isn't lifted by then. But privately owned mortgages not insured by the federal government are exempt from those rules. Those loans account for roughly 30% of mortgages nationally, and likely a larger share in California, where high home prices often exceed what federal mortgage programs are allowed to finance. Limón's bill would extend the ban on foreclosures to private mortgages and allow borrowers to temporarily waive mortgage payments for nearly a year, with the forbearance extending beyond California's declared state of emergency. In other words, miss 6 months of your mortgage because you got laid off due to COVID-19, and you'll get 6 months at the end of your loan to make it up. No interest or penalties allowed. Meanwhile, in Congress, Democrats released a third federal stimulus proposal last week, with many of the same borrower relief provisions contained in Limón's bill. But some Republicans are balking. Lisa Sitkin, attorney with the National Low Income Housing Project, says, "We can't necessarily rely on what's going to happen out of Washington. She wants the state to help, especially with low and moderate income borrowers." A spokesperson for the California Bankers Association says the group has not yet taken a formal position on the bill and cited voluntary arrangements some banks are already striking with borrowers. Governor Gavin Newsom negotiated a deal with several banks and credit unions in late March that would allow 90-day grace periods for certain borrowers. But Diana Dykstra, chief executive of the California Credit Union League, says granting extended forbearances on mortgages would be ruinous for smaller banks who depend on interest payments as capital cushions. For the credit unions, it would be a financial disaster, she says, of allowing people to go a full year without making mortgage payments. Beyond the new protections for homeowners, Limon's bill in Sacramento would help other borrowers. Repossession firms would be prohibited from repossessing cars for delinquent auto payments until 180 days after the state of emergency declaration was lifted. Auto loan borrowers could request forbearances for nearly a year, and missed payments would be tacked on to the end of the loan term instead of delivered in a lump sum payment. Landlords with mortgage debt would be granted similar forbearance options, as long as they deliver rent relief to tenants and agree to halt evictions. Vendors of payday loans would be required to reduce fees to borrowers and provide extended repayment plans. With the state legislature working on an accelerated time frame due to a pandemic-induced recess, both the Senate renter relief proposal and Limon's bill will face crucial votes in the coming weeks. This report is based on an article by Cal Matters, an independent public interest journalism venture covering California state politics and government. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
In the wake of two nationally publicized racial incidents earlier this month in which shoppers at Santee grocery stores wore masks with Nazi swastikas and a Ku Klux Klan hood, the Santee City Council voted on May 13th to confront the issue by expanding a community police board that will develop strategies for addressing intolerance. Mayor John Minto, who publicly denounced the incidents soon after they occurred, said he spent many hours talking with residents about what happened and is convinced the city cannot ignore or simply shrug it off. He says, quote, "We have to understand why and where it's happening. We're going to triage it, find out where most of the worst symptoms are, and bring people together." The sheriff investigated the incidents and identified the individuals involved, but did not make their names public and did not make any arrests. Though the acts were offensive, according to Sheriff Bill Gore, the men did not commit any crimes. The council voted unanimously during its virtual meeting to expand the community-oriented policing committee by adding up to 4 new members. The committee works with the sheriff's department, Santee's contracted police provider, on crime prevention and security strategies. Minto, who chairs the board, said he has 2 specific people he wants to bring on, an African-American man and a woman from the Anti-Defamation League, but didn't provide their names because he didn't have their agreement yet. Before the vote, the council heard from 22 people who sent letters and emails to the city about the explosive incidents, which made headlines both locally and nationally. The incidents opened up festering scars from Santee's history of documented hate crimes and white nationalist groups that gave rise to the derogatory nickname Klan T. The city has tried in recent years to overcome that stigma, even investing in a rebranding campaign. But the recent racial incidents threatened to undermine that progress. Public comments were nearly unanimous in condemning the acts by 2 men, one wearing a hood similar to those worn by the KKK inside the Santee Vons, and another wearing a mask with a Nazi swastika while shopping at the Santee Food for Less store. Michelle Perchez wrote in an email to the city, quote, "This type of behavior shouldn't be ignored. I firmly believe that to ignore it is to condone it." Other public commenters said the incidents revealed that while Santee has changed in recent decades and its residents have become more diverse, vestiges of racism remain, and people of color experience it. Evelyn Andrade, who ran unsuccessfully for city council in 2018 against the incumbent, Rob McNellis, told the council, quote, "There is racism in Santee, and it pervades the school system. It's offensive to people like me to say, this is not who we are anymore. So please stop saying that." McNellis previously called the incidents classless and tasteless. During the meeting, McNellis said he's offended when he hears people call Santee a racist community. "It hasn't been as long as I've been here," adding that he has been a resident for 26 years. But McNellis drew fire from some residents for insisting that the incidents with the two masked men didn't have anything to do with racism, but were merely statements protesting the requirement to wear masks due to the COVID-19 pandemic. He added, "It was a horrible, horrible way to state it." Councilman Stephen Houlihan fired back, "I absolutely denounce and despise these symbols," he said of the KKK hood and swastikas. "We have to address it, and just saying this is not who we are is unacceptable." Houlihan noted the negative publicity that will have serious financial consequences if people decide not to visit and shop in Santee. "We must create an environment that shows we are not like this," he told his colleagues on the council. The meeting was the city's fourth held with members in remote locations via teleconferencing technology during the coronavirus pandemic. Minto, a former San Diego police detective, said he has experience in dealing with racial intolerance and that the police committee is the right venue to develop a plan for addressing this issue. He noted that Starbucks worked with the Anti-Defamation League a few years ago after the coffee purveyor sustained outrage after a barista told two black men meeting in a coffee shop to leave. "We're not going to have a plan overnight," Minto said. "It has to be done thoughtfully and legally." But he added, quote, "People who live here and visit here deserve to feel safe." Reporting from Santee for East County Magazine, this is Brianna Gomez. California Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara has extended his order requiring insurance companies to return partial insurance premiums to consumers and businesses and provide financial relief amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The bulletin now includes May, as well as March and April. It covers at least six types of insurance: private and commercial automobile insurance, workers' compensation, commercial multi-peril, commercial liability, medical malpractice, and any other insurance line where the risk of loss has fallen substantially due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Department of Insurance will review all premium adjustments to ensure that they are fair and adequately reflect policyholders' reduced risk. Insurance companies must provide an adjustment to the premium, which can be a partial premium credit, reduction, return, or other appropriate adjustment no later than August 11th. The reduction in insurance costs for consumers reflects the reduced risks of accident or loss, with many still under stay-at-home orders. In addition, insurers are asked to work with any policyholders who have been acutely impacted by COVID-19 if they are unable to pay their premiums on time. He has asked insurance companies to extend a 60-day grace period for payments, as well as offer online payments to protect the health and safety of both workers and customers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Brianna Gomez with East County Magazine Arts and Music Spotlight. Eager for entertainment? It's showtime in Santee. Although indoor movie theaters across California remain closed due to COVID-19, the Santee Drive-In Movie Theater reopened over the weekend, showing four movies at its two theaters. The theater accepts cash only. If you go, you'll need to bring your own popcorn or other refreshments, since the snack bar will be closed. Also, bring your own FM radio to listen to the movies by tuning in to 89.3 or 89.7 FM. Loaner radios are available with a refundable deposit. Guests must park 10 feet from other vehicles and stay in vehicles except when going to the restroom, when masks and social distancing are required. Drive-ins, once popular across the U.S., dwindled in recent years due to competition from multiplex movie theaters. But even after those theaters are allowed to reopen, concerns about COVID-19 may result in a resurgence of popularity for drive-in theaters. To view movie trailers of coming attractions and get ticket information, you can visit SanteeDriveInTheater.com.
The region's COVID-19 testing is expanding. The public can now get free testing at two new walk-up sites run by the state: the former county assessor's office on Magnolia Avenue in El Cajon, and the Tubman Chavez Center on Euclid Avenue in southeast San Diego. The new state-run sites are in addition to state sites already operating in Escondido and Chula Vista. To make a free appointment at any state-run locations, visit lhi.care/COVID testing or call 888-634-1123. LHI stands for Local Health Initiative, and again, that website is lhi.care/COVID testing. Other tests are available for a fee. The county has opened an appointment-only drive-up testing site at the stadium in Mission Valley. That site can test up to 180 individuals a day and will operate Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. To make an appointment for the site at the stadium, county residents can call 211. Additionally, the county's Live Well on Wheels mobile office will offer COVID-19 testing at the Euclid Health Center each Saturday for the foreseeable future. An appointment is required. COVID-19 testing options include calling your doctor or medical provider to schedule an appointment, signing up for free tests on the state website at lhi.care/COVID testing, or calling 211 for the county-run sites. Recording for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
Santee voters will likely see two dueling ballot initiatives on term limits this fall. The City Council, at its most recent virtual meeting, directed the City Attorney to return in June with the proposed initiative to go on the city's November ballot. It would challenge an already qualified initiative that calls for term limits for city office holders. The action means Santee voters will see both measures on their ballots November 3rd. The Council earlier delayed both the Citizens Initiative calling for term limits and a citizens' slow growth initiative until the next general election, instead of adopting the measures by a council vote after residents obtained enough signatures to qualify the measures for a public vote. Both measures are backed by Preserve Wild Santee, an environmental advocacy group that has spent decades trying to block Bonita Ranch, a residential project that would build 3,000 homes and is currently under review by the city. The original term limit measure from Preserve Wild Santee calls for a maximum of 3 terms for council members and mayor. A partial term would count as a full term. That provision would directly impact Councilwoman Laura Cavall, who is serving 2 years on a partial term that ends this year. Under the proposed measure, the maximum service for a Santee office holder would be 20 years, including up to 3 terms for council members and 2 terms for mayor. Under the Preserve Wild Santee initiative, the maximum is just 12 years. Houlihan, who helped gather signatures for the slow growth and term limits measures 2 years ago, opposes putting another measure on the ballot, which he said would confuse voters and cost taxpayers another $100,000 in legal analysis and filing fees. Councilman Ron Hall says he supports longer term limits because of the time it takes to gain knowledge about the job. He contends that it's only fair that office holders be allowed more time to accomplish goals, but he does support some limits on how long officials may serve. Councilman Hall concludes, "All you have to do is look at Washington to realize we need term limits." Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. Viejas Casino and Resort became the first casino in San Diego County to reopen on May 18th, with a socially distanced line wrapped around the building when the tribal gaming operations opened its doors for the first time since March, when it shut down due to the COVID-19 crisis. Viejas is using UV light to sanitize tables, chips, cards, slot machines, and more. Guests and workers are wearing masks, and the casino is closing overnight for deep cleaning. Some slot machines are shut down, and only 3 players per table are allowed. Other changes include switching the buffet to no longer be self-service, though guests can place their order with a server. There is no valet service or bingo. Restaurants are open, and bars, though not for sit-down service in the bar. Several other casinos have also reopened or announced plans to do so, including Hamul, Sequan, Golden Acorn, and Harrah's Rincon. County Public Health Officer Wilma Wooten initially opposed reopening casinos, but later said she recognized tribal sovereignty and worked with the federally recognized tribes on phased reopenings with steps to protect public health and safety as much as possible. As sovereign nations, tribes rely on casino revenues heavily to fund tribal governments, education, and other vital services for their people. So the closure since mid-March has caused economic hardships for many tribal members as well as employees who were laid off or furloughed. But one local casino has bucked the trend, stating it will stay closed indefinitely in accordance with Governor Gavin Newsom's directive.
Casino Palma's website states, Chairman Temet Aguilar, the Tribal Council, and Casino Palma leadership do not believe in gambling with the health and safety of our guests, our team members, or the community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The County Parks and Recreation Department has created virtual photo backgrounds that you can use for video conferencing. Now, you can pose with a herd of bighorn sheep in the Anza Borrego Desert, hike to the halfway point of San Diego's toughest climb atop El Capitan, peruse the grounds outside a mountain cabin, visit a nature center or a historic adobe dwelling, enjoy a sunset over Lake Morena, stop to smell the lilacs in Sycamore Canyon, or pause alongside cows on the sprawling hillsides of Santa Isabel. Parks and Rec has selected some of their most popular pictures taken at iconic locales in our region's parks and made them available for download. Your virtual staycation awaits. Here's how to get started. If you're using Zoom, first go to sdparks.org. Click on Parks News Center and open the video conferencing background links. Then, from Zoom, open your settings, click Virtual Background, select the image, and wait for it to upload. You'll be immediately transported to a sunny SoCal destination. If you snap a screenshot during your conference, share with the hashtag UpsideOfInside. It's the coronavirus rendition of Parks and Rec's usual motto, Upside of Outside. You can also find links to all this and more at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Children's groups are speaking out against billions of dollars in state budget cuts being proposed in California, saying programs that benefit kids should be a priority. As a result of the pandemic, California has taken a budget nosedive, going from a $5.6 billion budget surplus in January to a $54.3 billion deficit. No one argues that the state is going to have to do some trimming, but Ted Lempert, who heads the group Children Now, says big cuts to child care, preschool, and K-12 education would be devastating for kids, especially in low-income families.
It's basically taking kids who weren't getting the supports they needed before this pandemic hit and really exacerbating these disparities.
K-12 education is slated for a $19 billion cut over 2 years, but Governor Gavin Newsom did set aside $4.4 billion in emergency federal aid and also has given the schools $2.3 billion that was supposed to be used to bolster the teachers' pension fund. Lempert also objects to the idea of eliminating the crisis hotline for foster youth. He says he's hoping the state and federal governments will work together to soften the blow.
Our next step is to work with the legislature to restore some of them and also, of course, pushing the federal government to provide more relief so some of these proposed cuts do not have to take place.
The legislature will have to vote on a final budget in June. The issue will likely return to the forefront in the mid-year budget revision in the fall. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.